Good morning, everyone. My name is Tom, and I am an alcoholic. Tom Cartier, and I am an alcoholic. My home group is the Honest Open and Free Home Group in Tucson, Arizona. That's where, when you guys have what you got going here, which is rain, we call that an event. And we don't even know what the humidity is. This is killing us. Let's have a moment of silence, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Okay, now I'm going to introduce our speakers. I have three wonderful speakers, two who I've known for quite some time and one that I just met today. And she's just wonderful. I talked to her and she's got a beautiful heart. But our first speaker is a little lady I met years ago. She's from Hawaii, and she's been involved in different things that have to do with the older alcoholic, and it's amazing for me to see her again. I didn't know I come to here. She's in Rhode Island. Somebody from Hawaii is in Rhode Island. Imagine that. But I'd like to introduce Beth.
Good morning, I'm Betsy, and I'm an alcoholic. And Tom and I go way back about 5 minutes or so. And my current home group is in Wilmington, Delaware, which is small, like Rhode Island. But it's a real honor to be here, glad to be here, delighted to be sober and to see all of you for this really cool topic, which is close to my heart, carrying the message of AA hope and recovery to the older alcoholic. My sobriety date is October 1st, 2000. My home group is in Wilmington, Delaware, the Friday morning women's group of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I'm privileged to be a part of this home group, and here's why. In my home group, there are several members of AA who are in their late 70s and 80s. These are beautiful women. Clear, hopeful, shining examples of human beings with a powerful, wise message of recovery through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And to be close to the people in our fellowship who have 20, 30, 40, 50 years of sobriety has been one of the greatest privileges of my sobriety. And I'll share a couple stories about some of the wisdom that I've learned and how to continue to carry this message to older alcoholics. So, this home group in Delaware is where I went when I first moved from Hawaii, and I sobered up in Hawaii. But in the last couple of years, my dad was an older fellow. He needed some help. I'm a sober daughter. I'm going to go help him. So there's another chance to give to elders that I learned in AA, and you taught me, trust God completely, be a sober daughter. So 30 years ago, my mom was an AA member, and she was sober, and one day I came home from college, and there she is sitting in the kitchen. This is in Delaware where I was a kid. And she's sitting there with the most gorgeous person with clear eyes and a smile. And at that time, I had no idea I was looking at my first sober member of AA, but she was sitting with her sponsor. And I'm a little teenage alcoholic, and I thought, well, whatever. But I noticed right off the bat because she looked right at me and said, "Hello, Betsy." And I thought, wow. She's not drunk. She's not gossiping with my mom. She's not drunk. She's not smoking. Who was that? So after she left, I looked at my mom. I said, "Who was that?" "That's Debbie H. That's my sponsor." And I thought, well, that's cool. That's like one of the coolest friends I've seen you have. So fast forward 30 years. My mom's in heaven. She died 30 years ago. I'm in Delaware to help my dad because I can. I'm sober. I can help my dad. I go to the Friday morning women's group, 10 a.m. on Friday mornings. And I sit down and we're just holding hands and getting warmed up. And I look across the room and we're sitting in a circle and I see this just gorgeous, white-haired, elegant, sober member of AA. And she looks great. And I had the, wow, I had the most powerful moment thinking, whoa, what if God has put me and my mom's sponsor together 30 years later? Still sober, still got those clear eyes. And she opened her mouth to share. And she said, hey, I'm Debbie. I'm an alcoholic. And I thought, oh, man, there's a God. There's a God in AA. And that is a little bit about how it's been. We sober up. We take one step outside of ourselves to go and help and to see what God's world is like. And all that magic comes. And so I walked up to her after that meeting and I said, well, hello, Debbie. I'm Betsy Bowen, Virginia's daughter. And she said, whoa, look what God put in front of us. And so that is a little piece of how I got from Maui to Delaware, and I'm thriving in Delaware because they've got Alcoholics Anonymous and a great community there. And so this home group that I'm part of, a lot of gals with long-time general service backgrounds, former delegates, very involved in service, and what they have taught me is how to sit back and sit still and listen. There's so much wisdom in our fellowship and our elders with all these years, 20, 30, 40. I met a gal yesterday in the seniors in sobriety room with 50 years sobriety. Lovely person. And this treasure is in our fellowship. And I've been privileged to know many of them. So 10 years ago, about almost 10 years ago, I sobered up in 2000 on the island of Maui, which is Area 17. Hawaii is a wonderful place to sober up. It's to be reborn as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous in the waves and the sunlight and, you know, happy, joyous, and free. Just look out the window. You might want to put down the beer and leave your room. Oh, God. There's life. So my home group on Maui was Kihei Morning Serenity, and it was suggested by my sponsor after I had worked the steps that I get involved in general service. Yeah, aren't we blessed to have sponsors in AA? You know, that was a great idea, and I love my sponsor, Shelley, to this day. She's in my pocket up here while I'm speaking. So as a brand new GSR, I hop on a plane to California from Hawaii, to attend the Pacific Region AA Service Assembly, which we know as PRASA. Well, as we know, one more time, when we get out of ourselves to go help others, God puts magic in front of us. And so one of the first people I run into when I get to California is this very excited, childlike little powerhouse. And her name was Marion B. She was in love with AA and her sobriety. Her unique gift was that she had sobered up in her senior years, and she was all lit up with gratitude about it. Marion's message, and I believe this is the message of hope that we're talking about in this room today, her message was this: it is never too late to get sober and live a wonderful life. It is never too late to get sober and live a wonderful life. She sobered up in her senior years. She grasped on to a life that was happy, joyous, free, useful, and she wanted to share it with others. We are never too old, Marion said, to drop the despair and loneliness of alcoholism and wake up to a glorious, useful, joyous, sober life. So this was Marion's message, and she and her husband, Stan B., who's still alive in Hawaii, championed this message all around Hawaii and the Pacific region. Marion B. was to plant the roots of 12-step service work for seniors, committee work, committee known as Cooperation with the Elder Community, and a movement now known as Seniors in Sobriety. And I'm sure there are many of you here who have been to the conventions and the workshops in the last 6 years. Just so privileged to see this thing grow. So, picture this. We're in California. New GSR, excited elder, She grabs hold of me at about 10:30 at night and says, come on, we are going. You are coming with me to set up an AA meeting for seniors in sobriety. Well, I thought it was a good idea to go to bed. But she was gung-ho. So I carried her boxes, and we found the right room. I will never forget being with her and setting up this room. She charges in there, opens the door. She goes, oh, this will not do. Look at this. The chairs are so spread out. How are seniors supposed to hear the message when it's all spread out like this? Get the chairs now. Start moving them. Circle them up tight. How are we supposed to hear? She goes, that's the problem. How are we supposed to hear the most important message when it's all spread out? You need to teach people your age, and you need to help us speak up in these meetings and move the chairs closer. And by the way, if you hold another meeting at 10:30 at night, I'm going after you because this is way too late. We need to set up a meeting at 10 a.m. And if you don't mind, maybe you could drive us. But get with the program. Woo, baby. She was cool, powerhouse. And, I mean, she was so full of life, she spread that message around. So I spent my first evening, my first meeting, in a room full of sober seniors in awe of the wisdom, the knowledge of the steps, the specific health issues that they needed to talk about, that they could understand and feel safe talking about. And at the end of that meeting, the members over and over expressed their thanks for a meeting where they could be themselves and where people spoke up so they could hear, where people moved slowly to their seats, helped each other to their seats, where there was laughter, where they could speak about death and life all in the same meeting and feel safe, where they could feel like one of the kids. Just like any of us, we want to belong. We want to be one of the gang here in AA, to feel how our primary purpose connects us. And that is so true of the elders who are still suffering from alcoholism and the elders among us, is that we need to pull together and not be left out. And Debbie H. from my home group in Delaware, my mom's former sponsor, always says to me, my favorite meeting is that one I go to on Monday nights down at Westminster Church. And that's what they do there. There's all these young guys there, and they treat me like one of the guys. And I love that. You know? Whew. So, as Bill W. says, whatever the form, it comes down to one drunk carrying the message to another drunk, circling around our elders, putting them into the lifeboat, pulling them into the lifeboat at any age is part of our responsibility. Marion B. showed me that a person of my age could help carry the message to the older alcoholic, especially with the help of my friends in the AA Fellowship who are elders. And there are meetings called Seniors in Sobriety, where people of this age can meet, and young people are welcome. If you don't have one, it's okay to start one in your town. You know, encourage the elder members of our fellowship who have all this wisdom and time sober to join up. Seniors, there's, as you'll hear in a few minutes from my colleagues, there are a lot of resources out there and websites which they'll mention. But I just want to close with this. We have been given a tremendous gift in AA. It's a gift of hope. Let's give it and never hold it back. As Marion would say, it is never too late to lead a glorious, sober life. Thanks so much.
Wonderful. Thank you very much. Next we have Anita. She's from Maui.
Maui, Hawaii.
Maui, Hawaii.
Hi. We're here spreading the aloha. My name's Anita, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm very, very grateful to be here. Very excited. And my home group is the Ohana home group, which is on the west side of Maui. Ohana meaning family. My sobriety date is October 29th, 2006. I have a sponsor, and I sponsor others. My experience with the older alcoholic in the community is carrying the message of hope. And I find when I work with other alcoholics, and I've had a few in my life that I specifically have worked with, but in a couple in particular, I tend to notice, like, when the older alcoholic comes into our groups, I kind of watch just, you know, for a week or two, and then they're there. And they don't say much because our groups tend to be a little bit more of the younger generation. But I just look and I listen, and then I kind of go over to them afterwards. And I have one gentleman in particular that it was, he had 10 days. And then I saw him at another meeting, and he had 17 days. And so I walked out with him after the meeting, and I said, I pulled him aside, and we were walking out to the parking lot, and I said, well, how you doing, Mike? How's it going? I see you've come to a couple meetings now, and you know, strike up the conversation. And he goes, it's really hard. And I said, you know, it is really hard. So this is how I've done it. You know, you break it down a minute at a time, a second at a time. You go for a walk. You wash your, you know, go for a swim or do whatever you can outdoors. Maui is a great place to be sober and to be, you know, getting outdoors is easy for us to change our frustration of trying to stop drinking at first there. And so I carried the message, and I continued on with him at each meeting, and it was almost like, okay, you break it down into minutes by minute by minute by minute. We chatted for 10 or 15 minutes after the meeting, and I said, look, we just stayed sober for 10 minutes, and it was just a miracle. This, when as he just looked at me, this little light bulb goes on in his head, and he's like, yeah, we did, huh? And then, you know, I'd see him at the next meeting, and then we'd chat, and we'd walk from the meeting out to the parking lot, and we've become friends. Now I see him, he had 30 days not too long ago, and this gentleman's way he's into his late 60s, and he just looks at me, and he's just so excited, and he's got his 30-day chip, and he looks over at me, he goes, I'm so glad you were there. And I just got this big warm and fuzzy all in my heart, you know, because it's like that is something that he started it at the first couple of days. And then there was someone that actually, you know, you reach out and you touch them and you say, hey, this is what I've done to get through to this next 24 hours. And then he keeps coming back. And so it's just, it is about carrying the message. It is about hope. You know, and I have other elders in my life that were, you know, I have a dear, dear friend who's also here in my pocket. He had 56 years of sobriety, and he was in an old folks home, and I met him in 91, 15 years prior to being sober, and he was one of those alcoholics who had that sparkle and that glimmer in his eye, and his name was Bill R., and you know, I wanted what he had. That man was something. It was something special. He'd come over and take my pretty roommates out, and they'd go to these meetings, you know. And I'm like, okay, where are you guys going now? And they'd go, we're just going to a meeting. And I'm like, what kind of meeting? And I was still very much an active alcoholic, and I didn't get it. Didn't know about AA. Didn't know any of that. But, you know, all I knew is that she didn't drink. And he didn't drink. And I thought, well, that's great. That's more for me. You know, I did. I was like, fine, you're missing out. And I just had no clue. I didn't get it. But we were both, I'm a pilot myself, and he was as well. And so we had that in common. And through that 15 years of when I wasn't sober, he would kind of live vicariously through me as I was doing my aviation career. And we just kept in touch over the years. But there was always something when we'd hang out, he had this really calming peacefulness about him. We would be driving in his little Toyota Tercel down Lahaina and the front street. You know, he'd be like 10 miles an hour, and he'd been there for all his life, and he's waving to everybody, and he's like this little Mr. Magoo guy, just totally peaceful, really, really having a nice time, and just out there and just waving. He knew everybody, but it was really, I wanted what he had. I didn't know what it was. And but I wanted what Bill R. had. And as he got older, he was 92 years old, he ended up in a nursing home. And I would go still and visit him. I would come back. I was doing some flying around, and I'd come back and I'd tell them my flying stories or show them some pictures. And I had just recently got sober. And I think that we actually went to one meeting together. So I knew he was sober at this time, and I was just newly sober. But I kept going back to see him over and over. Not so much he had the message, but I didn't realize I was actually going there to carry the message to him as well, as he's in this nursing home. And his 56 years was coming up, and I was thinking, well, this is great. We're going to get you a chip, and we're going to do it all up, and, you know, I'm all about the celebration. And he's like, okay, whatever. He was like, he wasn't as excited as I was, but you know what? I walked out of that. I mean, I'd go there, and I'd see him, and I walked out of there, and I felt like I was walking on the cloud, and I don't know what it was. It wasn't that we talked about anything in particular, but it was, I would tell him what was going on with the meetings, and I'd be the little messenger, and I ended up giving him his 56-year chip that I have with me at 4 months of sobriety, and he couldn't really remember his friends. We wasn't sure if it was 56 or 57, so we got them both, and I told him he had to stick around for the 57, but it was 56, and he's passed on, but it is just, I learned actually from my sponsor too, and I didn't realize though that I was carrying a message to this elder gentleman sitting in a nursing home, even if he had the 56 years of sobriety. And you know, other instances of people, I have my 79-year-old mother. I mean, you can carry the message to your mother. I mean, it's just like you see a hope. You know, she's seen me transform in the last 3.5 years that I've been sober. But you see, there's a hope. You know, it doesn't matter what age you are. You can be the 23, 43, 63, 83. It's all the same message across the board. And it's just, you got to give it away to keep it. And I didn't understand that message at first. I didn't understand that I have to give it away to keep it. And that for me was like, what is that? I don't get it, you know. And how can I give something away and still hold on to it and still have it? But that's the way it works here. And for me, I look around and I really pay attention to people in general. I want to see. I generally care about how they are and how they're doing in their sobriety. And this is how I did it. And I want to be able to reach out to that older, younger, what have you. But for the older community, I know that they're just looking at my mother, for example, or other friends. I mean, it's important that we do this we thing. And it's important that, you know, everybody wants to feel needed. But you get into service, have them do some kind of service work or, you know, incorporate them. My mother bakes cookies for my beach meeting, you know, and everybody, she mails them back. And then we get to eat them. I mean, she's doing service for our little beach meeting because I'd bring cookies when I was being secretary. So, you know, that's her little commitment to the meeting. But it's important. Each of us are individuals with this common thread and disease of alcoholism, and there is that hope of recovery in each and every one of us. And it's a matter of sticking in the middle of the pack, being a part of. There's a lot of love here. You don't have to do it by yourself. And just to reach out to the elder community, because they're thinking, you know, that's it. My life's over. You know, I'm going to use my mother again as an example. You know, she's 79 years old, and she's just not been happy, but and fulfilling. She thinks, okay, I know there's more to life, and there is more to life. But then, you know, you put down the drink and you find out there's a whole other world, and you have these people that want to kind of take you and put you in the middle of the pack and sit you down and come on, you're coming with us. And we do that, you know, I just feel really super so blessed and grateful to be a part of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that I have the opportunity to work with elders in this community and to reach out and to be of service. And that's a huge thing of all of this, is just to be. And I think that's why I'm here. I have no idea why God picked my name and put me up here. I have no idea. I mean, I've never done any kind of that CEC work or SICS or whatever, you know. I'm here that is the message, and I'm here to, you know, I'm sorry, but I haven't. But I'm here to say that I have worked with the elder community, and I do choose to continue on with that work. And I do continue. Each of us are individuals that are trying to stay sober a day at a time. And I'm just so grateful. And it is a WE program. And I just can't say enough. I'm grateful. Thank you. That's it. And that's all I have to share.
I got to tell you, I've been sitting there looking over this audience we have today, and I remember the last international we had a little hospitality room, and they would trickle in every once in a while, and most people avoided it, I guess, because they didn't want to be affiliated or associated with, you know, I guess they didn't know what being old was or something. I don't know what it was. But I got to tell you that it's salt and pepper here with people that I see from all over, from B.C. and from Yuma, Arizona, and from Tucson, from all over, you know, California. And these are people that I've seen just, like I said, salt and peppered into this here just a little bit, you know. And the amazing thing about this, it's just absolutely amazing. I happen to have the privilege of chairing the SIS conference this last year in Tucson. Next year it's going to be in Long Island, New York. But it was just absolutely beautiful. We had 110 people there. You know, you guys just blow me away. I mean, it's just absolutely wonderful. Next, I'd like to have you. Carol is another old friend of ours. We've been involved in. We've been involved in this for a long, long time. And I'd like to introduce Carol to you.
Good golly, did he say salt and pepper? And did he say old friend? Oh, you heard it. I know you did. I'm Carol, alcoholic. I'm from Area 5. That's a little wedge in our system in the Los Angeles area. And it does look like a wedge. It just goes from Malibu down to the airport area in El Segundo, where I live, and out to Pomona. Small. For those not in general service, we have 93 areas, and we're that little wedge. I think we're the smallest one. But we have the highest number of alcoholics per capita, you know, per area. Yeah. Per square foot or something like that. Yeah. I'm sober for 4 years, and I've been in general service for 3 years, and whatever's left over that you don't say in a half. And I went to PRASA. What else did I want to tell you as a preliminary? Okay, let's start. I at 1 year, I figured I heard it all. I went every day to a meeting, and we got enough of that. And someone in the back of the room announced a general service district meeting, and that all were welcome to go. And I said, I've been to a conference, and I've been to a roundup and meetings, and, you know, I've never been to a general service thing except the picnic. So I went with him, and they take you aside. I want to be at the meeting. They take you aside to explain what this general service is, big board and things like that that I never heard of. And then they did a thing that tweaked my heart. They said, we don't have enough people to represent us as general service representatives. Well, I like to be helpful. So I and I went back and told somebody, and they said, oh, that's a 2-year commitment. And I'm like, oh, brother. I'm leaving, you know. I already did my year in AA. So I didn't know I hadn't heard all your stories. So I stayed, and I just gritted it up. I had a sponsor, and, you know, it was, like, okay with that person. So it has been just an absolute pleasure. They told me not to expect to understand everything. Well, the next thing I heard about was PRASA, whatever that means. They always talked about this PRASA coming, and our general service is divided into 7 sections that take some areas in it, take those 93 areas. There's a couple in Canada, I believe, and 5 in the United States, and the Pacific region, figure it out, as the West Coast. It includes Hawaii and Alaska, I think 9 states and 13 districts or areas, 13 or 14. Let's just erase that part. A lot of states on the West Coast. And so they did this thing called roundtables after in one of the evenings at a round table. So I expected a round table. That's what I go to round tables, whatever. And then they listed topics like corrections and literature and, you know, just different things I'd already heard about. And then they said, and there's a seniors and sobriety round table. And I was sitting right next to our area delegate at the time, Gustavo. And he said, go to that. I said, what is that? He said, I don't know. Go to that. So he supported the whole thing, and we ended up getting a committee in our area, in my district that I was in, and then in the area in the same month, because I was so afraid to go to the district where I knew everybody. I called the area chairman, and I said, can you just make this a committee? I don't have to talk about it. You know, I don't have to get up in front of people. He said, well, just come and tell us about it. We won't have a vote or anything. So I was signed up in the district in January 2008 and in the area in the same month, and they both approved an ad hoc committee. So that was pretty amazing, because the people that came before us is what I had learned about this from, and that was Marion in Hawaii, whom I never met, but they had a big website, so I could get a lot of clues from it. It's now been taken off, and they're building a new very helpful website. At the end of this, we'll have a handout in the back, and you'll have all these references if you're interested at all. So let's see. We did the committee, but I wanted to tell you what I first did. The first thing I did after hearing about seniors in sobriety, and also our current area chairman, Chris, who's here, he was at that meeting, but it turned out later we didn't know about each other working with seniors. So that the area committee, that helped, because his district was working, my district was working, and we found out what a great effort was required and what was already being done. So I suggest start this in any way you wish. And what I started with was seniors in sobriety meeting, because I went to the second annual seniors in sobriety conference in Sedona, and I met Mickey there. He's from Mesa. And we emailed like every day. It was about 6 weeks. And I said, okay, fine, I'll start a meeting. How do I do it? He sent an email. I'll let you know by 3 o'clock. And I had an email that laid down some 8 or 10 things. He's made a list of 7 things, and that's available on one of the websites. So I just did what he told me. He said, first off, don't have an expectation and go with the flow, you know. And I hadn't thought of that because I'm pretty new. So... and I like my way. Yeah. And I've since learned it's all about me anyway. So I actually have an email, and it's one of my emails. The password is me, me, me. I can remember that. Yeah, that's easy. So let's see. From here. I wanted to tell you about the meetings, how significant the meeting was. It was very difficult for me to start. He said, get a few committee people, take a little bit of money each time, and that'll give you literature money and some, almost said beer money, sorry, coffee money. coffee money, okay. And it worked. I did just what he told me to do. I called him for encouragement, and it worked. We started the meeting at turns out we need young people at the meeting, too. There's a lot of reasons, not time to say them. Some of it's personalities, and some of it's that older people already know how it should be, so, including me. And I'd never conducted a business meeting, so it became a problem. But the things that happened from the heart there were, one woman came, she had 42 years, she had her little walker, and she sat down and she said, my God, I finally found a home. You know, after all that time, it was really something. We have another man who came with us, a little very hard of hearing, and in the regular group that I go to at the Marina Center, he was given to be the timer. Well, they did that so they could laugh when the timer went off, and went off, and went off, and they would laugh at him. And we were only slightly kinder in our adult group. There he goes again. And then we had the ladies who didn't yet want to wear Depends, and the men who have the prostate thing, so they leave the meeting 3 times, and we don't even laugh. You know. So it has this, or somebody would talk about their heart valve, you know, and they didn't talk, like a man doesn't talk about that in other groups perhaps because of, we're supposed to be strong, you know, women too. So it has its place. And our area chairman, Chris, he suggested we call the meetings senior friendly rather than just senior so they're not exclusive. So everybody's welcome, and as you can tell by these other two young people who spoke, not Tom. I always get even, you know, it's still in there. So we need the young people, and I myself was older people were always attracted to me since I've been 16 or 18, you know, starting with my dad's friends were 20 years older, but those were the alcoholic family. But really, always I was interested in older people. I liked my grandparents, and they liked me, and I have this laughter and fun, and they seem to pick up a little energy from me, something. So I did this to help those older folks. And one day I was talking at a meeting somewhere. I went to every one of our districts and told about this, and I'm standing there telling about these old people, and I have my hair flop in front of me. And I went, oh, my gosh, I've become one of them, you know. Oh, my heavens. I mean, I was really surprised while talking to see, yeah. So I'm a card-carrying Medicare member now. an ARP, you know, I have it all, so I'm blessed. And there's a family history of this old thing because my mother, you had to be 50 to be in the senior center, and you got those 50-cent meals, so she lied about her age at 48. So here I am. I'm just stuck with old people, and now I am one, and I didn't used to be this way. So, and for those of you who are young, you're not the senior yet. You better hope to be. I think that's a good goal. Okay. So am I about 10 minutes? Okay. So, there's a lot of things going on that can help you to start a meeting or start a committee. I will speak anywhere on this topic. And I have, well, I won't go into that. I've made up a list of resources that we found, such as the brochure for the, it's never too late for the older person. What's it called? Adult? Yeah. So that's on here, and there was an article in the box 459, so that's a New York thing, and we have the previous desk for special needs started a CEC, which is cooperation with the elder community, workbook, so that we've been acknowledged in New York, though now with the cutbacks at the different desks, you know, change of desks, we have to remind them we're here. Excuse me. So when you leave, there'll be that resource list handed out to you. We made copies of that. And the one thing that's not on there is SIS, which is Seniors in Sobriety. So I'll tell you that website. It's pay attention, write out the words, seniorsinsobriety.org. It's that easy, okay? And on there, you'll find the conference flyer for Long Island. Next year, and you will find the how to start a meeting. And I also suggest you ask to contact Mickey. He has another form of that same thing. And you will find, I wrote some things down. So sorry. Let's see. That's about it. But the hospitality room is here. On the fourth floor, we have a few handouts left. I'm asking that our senior friend from British Columbia, Claire, hand out an email list to each row, if you wouldn't mind. If you're interested, we can put you on the email list for Seniors in Sobriety that Mickey keeps in Mesa and Yuma, Arizona. He lives one place, works the other. And Area 5 is the one that I am in, and that's on there, aascaa.org. And we will be posting as much as we can from this information, and Hawaii just about has theirs reposted. They have it in a draft form, and it's the former one was very helpful to starting the committee. So I'm hoping this will be the same. And let's see, that's the email, the seniors, and the CEC committee. So I did want to say this one clarification because it's been quite confusing for people. And when I went to the conference, it said CEC and SIS, CEC and SIS. So SIS is a grassroots movement of people starting meetings for seniors. And anyone can do that. Absolutely anyone, because that's how we start groups. And I had, you know, only 1 year experience. I didn't know how to do it, so somebody told me how to do it. Somehow, grace of God, I got courage. Then the other is CEC, the Cooperation with the Elder Community. So those are on the level of the general service. It's, like literature, corrections, you know, all those. So that one takes more effort, as anyone who has tried to do it knows, except Marion. She just made it happen. So just to, it becomes a problem in the area when they think you're starting meetings to separate AA into old people and younger people. So it's just not what we're doing. We just want places. The senior meetings are places where seniors can feel comfortable, and also for new seniors to go so they are not turned away by us because we have a mohawk or a tattoo or a ring in our nose, or we say that word all the time. All the time. So, you know, it's friendly, but it's especially helpful to the committee, cooperation with the elder community and the districts, and whoever wants a professional to refer an older person, they'll have a place that they know it's most senior friendly for them. Okay, so for carrying the message to the older adult, for me, I am responsible, and I thank you for letting me talk here.
Weren't they great? Golly, it just went up. We're going to open the mics now for any questions. Please use them and ask us anything, relatively anything. Just get right to the mics right up there.
Hey, my name is Bill. I'm an alcoholic. I live on Cape Cod, and I'm a member of the... I'm choking up a little bit. That's funny. A member of the Beginner's Welcome Group that meets in Brewster, Massachusetts. I want to know how you get the job where you get to hug the girls all the time. Are you a senior citizen?
It's not a job.
No, I do have something serious to say, maybe. I just forgot it, though. One thing is, you mentioned an age fairly often that's mine, so I guess I found out I qualify as a senior citizen. I don't really have a question. I just like to get in front of a microphone, I guess. But what you did do for me is that there is a senior citizen center in Dennis, Massachusetts, where they have AA meetings, and I've never been to that meeting, and I'm going to go. So thank you for encouraging me to do that.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I'm known as Fuzzy, and I'm an alcoholic from Cleveland.
Hi. How are you?
And we have a meeting. Started out, I was retiring, and I met a guy named Greg O, former TV exec. And I said, Greg, what are we going to do in retirement? He says, come on down. We're going to go see Mulhall at the senior treatment center. So I started taking him there. He was in a wheelchair. After a while, Greg got confined to a nursing home. Well, we took the meeting to him, two, three guys and us. Well, pretty soon, a guy named Tex H., about 40 years sober, 80 years old, also in a wheelchair, came to the same nursing home. It's called the West Bay Treatment Facility in Lakewood, Ohio. And more people started bringing the meeting. We now attend a weekly meeting at that treatment facility. There's five or six people in the facility in walkers or wheelchairs or various states, and we bring a bunch of other people, younger and older, to that, and it's possible to do that. They appreciate it that the highlight of their week. Somebody to talk to and not sit and nod their head. Somebody comes and visits. They get to share their sobriety. They get to comment on the new people that speak. And it's a wonderful exchange. You know, it is a wee program and not a small Scottish program, but a wee program. And there was no rules. There was no thing. We talked to people. In Cleveland, we have in our meeting schedule, there are 1,000 meetings. And we asked Ruth Dubin down there at the office, and she said, don't put it in the book. Just hold it in the facility. And the facility is very, very helpful, and they appreciate that we do this for them. They make available their conference room. And so it's not something that takes a lot of rules or a lot of organization. It just takes the willingness to do it and the willingness to visit these people. So anybody who wants to do that, just do it. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you.
I'm Mike Ryan. I'm a member of the Midway Group of Alcoholics Anonymous in Lewis, Delaware.
Hi, Mike.
And I just don't have a question. I just want to make a quick comment about late-blooming alcoholics. We had a gentleman who lived in Pennsylvania and never drank all his life. His wife of 50 years died. He was 76. He moved to we are a beach town, and we are a famous drinking beach town. And he moved down there, and he began to drink. And he drank for 3 years. He found our group in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I won't go into the details, but he was 79 when he found the group. He now is 92, and he's sober. And I just wanted everybody, you know, not everybody comes in at 20, 30, 40, 50 years. This gentleman was 76, and he found it, and he got sober. So thanks.
Thank you. Thank you very much. You know, we have a community south of Tucson that's called Green Valley. It's a retirement community. It's kind of like a Del Webb operation. But the amazing thing about it is there's a Walgreens in Green Valley there that right now holds the record for selling the most alcohol of any liquor store in the state of Arizona. Walgreens in Green Valley, a retirement community.
Morning, everyone. My name's Dave. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey.
And I'm from Vermont. We don't have meetings this big. I think this is the biggest meeting I've ever been to.
Who's speaking to Mike?
This is the biggest meeting I've ever been to. I'm from Vermont. Real small, real rural. But I did want to say some of my experiences that we have old-timers, and then they can't get out of their house anymore. And they don't go into nursing homes. But one of some of the greatest meetings I've ever been to is when you find that out, is to go visit them and then set up a regular weekly meeting. They appreciate it. Their wives appreciate it, or husbands. I can't tell you how many times I would go to this old fellow's house and his wife was, thank God you guys are here. And it really helped me in my sobriety and learning how. That's all I really want to say. So if you have somebody that can't get out of the house, bring the meeting to them.
Thank you.
Hi, everyone. My name is Dana Leon. I'm an alcoholic from Tucson. And I am the DCMC for Pima County. And I had a question for Carol. Like Tom had mentioned, is we have some communities around southern Tucson area and northern Tucson area that are elderly communities. And trying to, get rid of that stigma of AAs not wanting to be called elderly and being actively involved. One of the things that we come across is, I've been in AA for long enough, I don't want to do any more. How do you get past that? How do you get them to get back involved with the community and start participating with getting these meetings started?
Thank you. It was two questions. One, how do you get other people involved? I wish Chris were here to speak about that. Our area chairman, current chairman Chris, he suggested every district just send a liaison, just to keep in touch. You know, they didn't really have to work. Just come and listen and tell them back. And we have a large committee now. I mean, like 15 people or so, maybe 20 names on our email list. So that worked very well. Also get the young people involved. IKIPA suggested to us we have a coordinated effort, maybe have a dance together. It's really cool. So, we haven't done it yet, but what a great offer from them, you know. And then can somebody remind me the other portion of his question? Oh, the stigma of... Oh, the elder word. We don't use the elderly word. To me... Yes, that's the one I said, how to get new people is, if they're burned out, get new people, get young people, just invite them to come and look and represent their district, and they'll get interested or get someone else who's interested. For the elder word, I just say I am an elder. You know, the way they talk about it in church, you're the senior people, you're the elder. It just is a word that the founding people in Hawaii had to choose. I noticed that Alcoholics Anonymous refers to it as the older adult. I like that. But if we had OA in sobriety, we'd have Eaters Anonymous in sobriety. So it doesn't work. So it's difficult. So I just say it's an elder committee, and the rest of the time talk about seniors. And to me, the word elderly means the frail elderly. When I become elderly, my daughter will be taking care of me.
Yeah, that's right. Actually, it's called cooperation with the elder community, not the elderly, the elder community.
Hi, I'm Jennifer. I'm an alcoholic. And hi, and I'm from Austin, Texas. And this is really impressive to me and important to me because a year ago, my dad at 61 died of this disease. And when you ladies spoke of, you know, the hope, I kept having that hope in the last years of his life. And then it, you know, of course, was not a pretty death. So it is important to me to carry that message. And another friend of mine from Austin and I were talking, and we have double-digit sobriety, and we see women that come in that are elder in their age but new to the program. And sometimes we wonder that they feel like they can't connect with us, and we want to carry the message to them. What advice do you have for an approach that we can, you know, talk to them and carry the message without them feeling like we're too young and we don't know anything?
Marion said, look around and get your older friends here. Drive them. Bring them. Because it is true, we can speak best to those we can relate to. So most home groups have a lot of wise members who are elder and would carry that message with you. That's...
In our central office, it's suggested that we get an elder list that we keep wherever they call for meetings, you know, where people call and say, hey, I'm a drunk, come and help me. There.
Okay, we got time for about maybe one more here.
Hi, everybody. Good morning. My name's Carol Jan. I'm an alcoholic, and my home group is Seniors in Sobriety in Kona, Hawaii.
Hey, hi, Gal. Good to see you.
I want to tell you just a little bit of history. I don't have any question. I'm afraid the history will get lost, but it makes me really nervous to get up here and do this. I got sober in 1975, and people in AA told me I needed to change my profession. I was an alcoholic bartender. And so they sent me to nursing school. Well, my affiliation with older people was I got to keep watching this die. As the unrecognized seniors in intensive care units for a lot of years in my beginning sobriety. So I had a real genuine empathy and consideration for the elderly people that came in, and nobody would identify it. They put our diagnosis, heart disease, kidney disease, and you'd see way back in the pages somewhere there'd be something about they drank. And so then when I was sober in Kona, I moved to Kona 1 year, and I was there for a few years. And I was in a traditions meeting. Traditions weren't very exciting in our town. And so it was held at this home of Jim and Cherie, who were very interested in service, and they were budding seniors. And I'm sitting there one Sunday afternoon, and after the meeting, this lady walks up to me, and she says, "Would you be my sponsor? I need somebody to help me with steps." And I said, "Well, let's talk about it. I usually, if I sponsor, that's what I do. I go through steps with people." And she said, "Well, I'm on step 7, and I just don't know what to do." I said, "Oh, who's your sponsor?" "Oh, well, I don't have one. I'm just doing the steps." And her name was Marion B. And I said, we're going to start at step 1. And so that was the beginning of my being captured, literally, by Marion B. As time went on and sponsorship, sponsee proceeded, there were a lot of adventures. One of the adventures was within the first year of her sobriety, she brought me a manuscript. It was called Marion's Book of Prayers. I said, "What on earth do you think you're doing?" I said, "This is non-AA related literature. You cannot rewrite the big book." Well, this woman had such a dynamic energy that there was nothing that was going to stop her. And so I just went, and I said, "Okay, God, this is in your hands. I have no idea where this is going to go." At the first AA convention that I took her to her first AA area assembly, and she drew out of the hat for our next DCM, who ended up being Greg Muth, who ended up being our GSO manager. Talk about God and connections. I mean, I am not this really big person in AA, but I have been surrounded by such miracles through this program, and it's just absolutely unbelievable. So at that first convention, here came Marion with her, always with her little book of prayers, non-AA approved literature. She goes to the top of the escalator right by the conference room and the registration, and she's handed, as you came up the escalator, you got a book. And eventually the committee got wind of this, and some couple of guys came over and said, "Marion," by then they knew who Marion B. was. They said, "Marion, you cannot give these out. It is not approved." She said, down the escalator she went, and as you got on the escalator at the bottom, you got a book of Marion's prayers. Anyway, that was just the beginning of this wonderful adventure that God gave me with her. And I hope the history of how SIS got started is never forgotten. We sat in rooms with a few select seniors just knowing that this was not going to work, and Marion's saying, "Oh, yes, it is. We're going to get an ad hoc committee. We are going to get money. We are going to get literature." And it just went on and on and on. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you. I'm not going to tell you I have two of those. Marion was a saint. I want to thank everybody, especially people who shared from the mic. I'd love to thank my panel once more.